73.0. Any further additions to labor? Labor is closed. Okay, we'll meet tomorrow at 8:30. We have DEC, Fish and Game, Commerce and Economic Development, and Hess.
In order. First item we'll take up is HCR 15. We'll also take up Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 314.
HCR 15.
I think that's the companion bill for the funding. You have the 314.
How are they?
Yes, yes.
And I tried that special way last night, but it burned my feet.
Really?
And every other time I eat down there, it's usually pretty scummy.
I eat every single thing, even a little more.
Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 15, establishing a joint House and Senate Committee on Oil and Gas. Have a motion?
Move and ask unanimous consent to put out Senate Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 15 on finance.
All in favor?
Wait, I have a question. Where's the fiscal note?
House Bill 314, the companion bill, which is up that way.
Okay.
Except there's one for FY 83.
Motion before the committee, move out individual recommendations. All in favor? Next bill before the committee is House Bill 314.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions.
Senator?
I noticed that the Senate's budget is higher than the House budgets here, and I realize that the Senate is carrying the professional secretary on their side. But I was just wondering if there's any other reasons for the difference in the expenditures of the two sides. Contractual is higher on the Senate side, and travel is a little bit higher.
Does each member have a copy of it right now? Yeah, this should be in the packet. Senator Betty Ferencamp's office.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, yes.
Breakout here?
Yeah, I know, I was just wondering what it was, why they were different. Is that normal for one House to have a different budget than the other House? I'm just asking a question.
Depends on what they're doing. Senator Ferencamp, is Jim or someone here that can answer Senator Fake's question?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, at this point, I can't say exactly what is normal, because normally the appropriations are together. However, it was our feeling on the Senate side that that was what we needed in order to carry out the charge we had. So that's what we put in. It's not escalated at all.
Okay, well, I felt, Mr. Chairman, may I continue? I felt like the House not including a secretary was unfortunate, so I was glad that you have a secretary there.
Well, we're hoping we can work more closely together.
Right, but it was the travel and the contractual that I was wondering about, that they didn't include.
I think, if I may, Mr. Chairman, that the members of the committee on the other are new to committee and not as familiar with the work that's assigned to do are with the charge ahead of us.
May I have a few more questions? The committee is currently operating, right?
During session time, the committee operates more on the Senate side with the Resources Committee than as a special committee during session. And then during the interim, we work strictly with the committee.
Well, who's paying the expenses of the committee now?
Senate President.
Okay.
And Resources Committee.
Senator Sackett?
Senator Ferencamp, who came up with the cost analysis, the breakdown? Who did that?
This one?
The 73 and the 133.9.
We did, the House came up with the 73, we came up with the 133.9, so.
Okay, just to reiterate Senator Fake's question, what is the differences there in the contractual and travel? Do you know why there are more?
Because I foresee needing to do some work with rewriting of the statutes, with needing to get some help on the Washington scene. I can't answer for why the House has theirs like they have.
Okay, do you have a breakdown of your request?
Yes.
There's no, we don't have any breakdown except for the total figure. No further questions.
No further questions? Thank you, sir. Do you have a motion?
I'll move that individual recommendation.
All in favor? Individual recommendation? Next item before the committee will be SCR 5, requesting DOT to reconstruct and upgrade the Petersville Road. No one signed up to testify. Senator Fakes.
If there are no questions, Mr. Chairman, we heard extensive testimony on this in Transportation Committee, and I'll move the bill out of committee with individual recs.
Motion before the committee to move the bill out, individual recommendations. All in favor? Bill's moved. Next item, SCR 6, encouraging the upgrading and resurfacing of the Old Glen Highway from Snick River to Batsy River. No one signed up to testify on this. Any discussion? No discussion. Do we have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll move this bill out of the Finance Committee for with individual recommendations.
Motion before the committee to move the bill out, individual recommendations. All in favor? Bill moved. Next item, take up Senate Bill 124, amending the Alaska Agricultural Loan Act. Bill's moved before the committee before.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
There is a committee substitute which makes it clear that there was a $350,000 short-term loan limit instead of a $200,000 loan limit, but that is only true when the borrower is in a farm disaster area that is declared under Title III because of natural disasters.
No one signed up to testify on this bill. Is there any dialogue from members of the committee?
I'll be available to answer questions.
And Mr. Chairman, no one. I think there's someone here from the Department of Natural Resources to testify. Yeah. Let me pass out a few things, Mr. Chairman, just for the committee's information, and then I've asked somebody from the department to come and answer some questions as to what's been done here. I'm passing out an audit by Interstate Question Audit on the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund. And this audit ended on June 30, 1982, so it's not super current. The audit spells out some real problems with the loan fund, and I was curious as to what the department is doing in order to address some of the questions of the audit. When the audit came out, the then Commissioner Cass asked then Deputy Commissioner Jeff Haynes to address some of the issues in the audit, and I have a copy of his recommendations also on the Agri-Revolving Loan Fund. Then I have their current balance sheet, and that's the letter that Senator Petula gave us, is responding to the delinquency rate for the Agri-Revolving Loan Fund as shown on the current balance sheet. My interest is, after the hassle with AHFC and wanting that particular fund to have legislative scrutiny, I felt like we should do it with all of them when they came up for discussion. A couple of points in the in the audit, if you will turn to the review of the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Agriculture, Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund by the Legislative Budget and Audit. It talks about several problems in here. On page 5, they said that the, and these are things that I'd like the department to answer specifically as to what they've done to improve this. On page 5, you have the findings and recommendations, and recommendation number 1 is that the revolving loan fund should establish procedures to ensure the loans are issued to Alaskan residents. And they talk about over $2 million worth of loans that appear to be going to outsiders who are living outside, whose addresses and banks are outside. And I just want to know about that, whether this was accurate, what the response was. Jeff Haynes concurred in that, but then he's not an expert in that particular field. Recommendation 2 says that the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund should ensure loan notes are properly executed. And they talk about problems in filling out the papers and that not everything is filled out properly. Specifically, that the proof of the contractual agreement between the borrower and the loan fund were not accurate. And there's a couple of loans in default, according to the audit. And they can't, the Attorney General is saying that you probably can't collect on those because the paperwork wasn't filled out properly. So I'm just curious as to what the department is doing to ensure that doesn't happen. There were, in the next recommendation on page 7, they talk about that there are some loans that were given by the department that the board didn't approve of, and loans given by the board that the department didn't approve of. So there seems to be some conflict there, and I'd like to know about it. Recommendation number 4 talks about the loan fund should strengthen its guaranteed loan procedures, that when a loan is given to both a bank and a person, the checks are made out just to the person and the person is not paying off his mortgager at the bank. And that recommendation 5 is that loan inspections should be performed by the Division of Agriculture. So those are some of the things that I asked the department to respond to this morning before we look at raising the limits of this particular fund. And then if you'll turn to their balance sheet on the long skinny sheet there, and they're not numbered, I apologize for that, is the March 30th, 1983 balance sheet for this, and it shows that there are 252 borrowers, 627 loans out, for a loan balance of $36 million. The auditor's method of accounting defaults, which is once you're late on one payment, the whole loan is considered default, shows that there are 35% of the loans in this fund are at default. But that's a rather restrictive way of determining default. So if you just look at just loans that are in default 30 days and just those payments, you've got 17 and almost a half percent of the loans in this fund are in default. And I believe Senator Fatula has given us a letter explaining those default rates, but I was really interested if we're talking about increasing the amounts here. I think we should know about that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is all interesting, and I appreciate the information, but I don't think it really is germane to the bill, except that when you look at the backup, you find that, as I understand it, of the delinquencies, most are in the Delta area. The delinquencies in the Delta area come about, and we should remember this is a pioneering farm area, and I think if we look at the pioneer American farm history from Massachusetts to California to Alaska, you would find mishaps and tragedies and a lot of hard work before farming becomes stable in any community. But according to the letter of May 5 from Heim to Kurtula, and the senator can speak to that, there was a crop failure because of weather problems. There was late appropriation in 1981 from the legislature, which prevented planting money reaching the farmers in time. There were unusual conditions, although some farmers who planted in 1982 did obtain good quality barley and good yields. You know, the senator made reference to the AHFC, and I think our position on that was that nobody around this table wanted to cripple the program. There was a recognition that there were some problems, but we took the position that we wanted to be supportive of the program. And the very fact that there is a delinquency problem in the Delta suggests that we should treat that as a disaster area, and we should change the loan limits in that one area of the state. What is the alternative? If we do not provide that, seems to me we're in the same position of international bankers who decide they're going to foreclose on Poland, if the senator will permit that analogy, because I think that, and that it would be an imprudent decision not to change those loan limits if that is the area of the state where most of the delinquencies are, and if that is necessary to give these people a chance to work out their problems. I would like to hear from the senator from Palmer, but it doesn't seem to me that we're really, that this is the vehicle, I want to use that phrase, this is not the vehicle to address those issues.
Chairman Fakes.
Senator Josephson, I think you're putting lots of words into my mouth and lots of implications that I didn't say. This is merely information. This is the first opportunity that we've had to look at this particular loan fund. I mean, this may not be the vehicle to do anything, but it's certainly, I don't think, you don't want to limit how much information is brought to this committee. I don't think that's your point at all. And my only point is that we do have a fund here that has some delinquency problems. If we're not willing to address some delinquency problems one way or another, then why make it a loan fund? Why not just give it a giveaway? My only point, and I'm not opposing this bill, and I'm not opposing the increase in the rates top level. I'm merely saying we have some problems here, and any prudent business people looking at this will have to know all the ramifications of it. That's my only point. And I think I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't bring this information to the committee's attention.
Mr. Chairman. Senator
Cato. I hesitate to get into this because you could go back to the days of the ox cart here. But, in fact, the collective wisdom and imposition of a lot of administrative pressure, we imposed upon a agricultural loan fund, which is a miniature agricultural bank for development purposes and supporting funding for agriculture, a whole development loan program. The agricultural loan fund had become pretty much a stabilized banking instrument for existing farming in Alaska and a little bit of small new farming. There was no land distribution, so it had come to a lack of critical mass for development. The administration came in with a multiple of projects, and because there was no other vehicle designed, the developmental loan program was imposed upon the agricultural loan program. So we have two different factors here, and I think it's spoken to slightly in this letter. Senator Joseph adequately stated, succinctly stated, the problems of Delta that resulted in these delinquencies. Now, we have a very good, very conservative agricultural loan program, and I suspect that as a banker, I know something about delinquencies, and a 30-day delinquency is nothing in this area. When you get to 90 days, you start getting concerned. So I think the 17% or maybe even the 13% delinquency is the one that you want to use for purposes of public concern. The Agricultural Loan Fund was started as a developmental loan program originally. And most of the amendments over the years, including the most recent ones that have tightened it up, I've been the author of, or at least been the corresponding author. The last year or the year before, we increased the interest rates. We tightened up the program. We removed the processing loan program and put it over into CPAP and other instruments that are available. It's a very sophisticated large loan. We've slightly went back to production. Now, I find my experiences with even this administration, they know a lot about running a survey, setting up the background of traffic, and setting up a Dairy Queen. They don't know a damn thing about setting up a dairy. When you get into a production situation, which is mining, or farming, or fishing, there are a whole lot of factors that come in. And in my original debates on the Delta program, and remember, although I ultimately voted for the Delta program, I was in great opposition to it being just tossed upon us. Much of this debate included the fact that we weren't just spending the money, and we're just going to put the money and put people out there on land clearing expenses and developing the roads and perhaps the schools and the electrical program, but we had probably $50 or $100 million worth of other investment. This is long-term investment, and you loan to the land. Really. And you have to understand that. Now, I was in the state of Oklahoma 30 years ago, just out there looking at what was going on. There, a 65-year-old man got a 30-year loan because it was loaned
really to the land. The Delta program, if you look at it that way, you may have to close out, foreclose on two or three generations of people. This has happened in all development. And you abuse them to some extent. They're bad managers, some of them, and they're not lucky. But your investment is protected because the land and the development on that land is easily worth the total investment, including the short-term chattel. You go with the person out there in a developmental program in a far different way than you do in a bankable, short-term agricultural loan to existing farms. And we made that commitment some years ago. And it's strictly for the Delta program right now that this is before you. Remember, it just extends the loan limits for 1 year, short-term. And apparently that is necessary in order to have a good hard look at whether some of these farmers should be given another chance to put in the crops this year. And that's the decision. Again, I don't think that you have people that have any knowledge of farm banking in the auditing section on the fault side, fault end. And I don't think that we have adequate background and knowledge right now to foreclose the program that was a major state commitment. Again, though, just as a farmer, we should separate mentally that which is all too easy to flash about in the newspaper. We should separate what is developmental loan, maybe ought to be a developmental loan category that we've committed to, from a hard bankable agricultural loan. There's two separations here. And you'll find your agricultural loans to your dairies and to your longtime producers are in very good shape. I've run audits before, and they compare very favorably to any of the veterans loan programs or any other state programs. I just want to give you just a quick background. Your problem is you're in the developmental loan category, and you had a couple of bad years, and that's the reason this bill is before you.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly don't object to bringing information to the committee. I do that once in a while myself. But I had thought, and I apologize to the Senator for presuming that this was brought because of some objection to the bill. I had really thought that because the bill had been held over once, and because I had thought that the information was offered as germane to the issue of whether or not the committee should report the bill. I welcome the information, and it seems to be accurate information, but I think we're in agreement now, I do not see that it does anything vis-a-vis the particular question of raising the limits in Delta.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Jefferson. I appreciate those words. I do want to hear from the department, sir, because I've just been given the delinquency rate, the number of delinquent loans as of March 30th. And the senator from Wasilla mentioned that don't count anything unless it's 90 days, 90 days. So we have 30 loans that are delinquent over 90 days in farm development. We have 48 loans, chattel loans, that are delinquent over 90 days. We have 51 loans for operating budgets that are delinquent over 90 days. You have 15 loans. Now they have given certain loans to the Department of Law for this for legal action. And those loans are considered in default. So there are 15 of those in farm development for $401,000. 18 chattel loans that have been given to the Department of Law for action for $559,000, and 13 operating loans for $500,000 that have been given to the Department of Law. And all I want to know is what the Department of Natural Resources is doing about delinquency. I understand about farmers. I understand it's a very difficult kind of job to get started. But doggone it, we're talking about public money here. We have an enormous amount of delinquencies, 198 total, and I think we should find out what they're doing about this.
We have with us Mr. Bob Arnold, Deputy Commissioner of DNR, and Mr. Dean Brown, Deputy Director of Agriculture.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Arnold, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, accompanied by Dean Brown, Deputy Director of the Division of Agriculture.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'll speak to each of, I think, the points that were raised this morning in a general kind of way. First of all, with regard to the bill which is before the committee, our view is that of the hundreds of farmers who are there, not a large number will require a raise in the loan limits. But we do think it makes sense, as the sponsors have pointed out, to remove that statutory prohibition that now exists of any loan for the short-term loans for to raise it beyond $200,000. We think a small percentage would be applying, and therefore favor that lifting of the limit. Secondly, with regard to the audit which Senator Fakes has referred to, this audit took place last summer during the last administration and described practices which it found, which the then administration sought to correct through a series of memoranda and calls for action on the part of the Division of Agriculture. With regard to those actions which were contemplated by then Deputy Commissioner Haynes, I have personally reviewed with the Division of Agriculture the steps that have been taken to remedy those deficiencies in a general or removed sort of way here in Juneau, and am satisfied that the efforts of Commissioner Katz and Deputy Commissioner Haynes have been successful in rectifying many deficiencies, in establishing new forms and procedures to reply to the very substantial criticisms of that midsummer, early year and midsummer 1982 audit. Deputy Director Brown will be able to speak in more detail to those issues. Thirdly, with regard to our view, with regard to the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund, we know, as Senator Petula has pointed out, how it grew in a fairly short period of time from a modest program to one of over $50 million, and that a number of errors were made, procedures were not quickly as established as they should have been. Since January, the new Director of Agriculture has carefully reviewed the files and the past record of the Revolving Loan Fund, including an examination of that audit, and by so doing is aware of the kinds of problems that arose during the last administration in order to be alert to avoiding such errors or failures in the future. Secondly, he has reviewed the actions taken by the staff of the Loan Fund in an effort to make sure those checklists prepared by Deputy Commissioner Haynes have been accomplished. As I mentioned earlier, we have likewise reviewed those files and sought to assure that the actions were taken. In addition to this, the regulations which were contemplated is a weak word, those regulations which were recognized as very much needed have moved ahead, and a draft was reviewed just this week, an extensive draft of regulations governing the Loan Fund Board. Finally, with regard to this administration's view regarding the Loan Fund, a representative of the Commissioner's Office has attended each meeting of the Board to provide that kind of oversight envisioned by the legislature in its adoption of the fund. I now invite questions or invite you to ask Deputy Director Brown for some particulars, if you choose.
Senator McKay.
Mr. Chairman, I was for, I'd like to inject something at this point, just for, I guess, sake of the information. That I spent 25 years banking coastal Alaska, which is basically fisheries, and not unlike agricultural, is basically seasonal. You can have a lot of circumstances, even with the best fishermen, that it's going to make them delinquent with one paycheck or one payday at the end of the season. It was my experience in the portfolios that I managed that probably 60% of those portfolios were seasonal loans. Loans to fishermen. Some of them were term loans for boats, and some of them were short-term loans for gear and fisheries. But as I recall, that part of my portfolio, it wouldn't be unusual for it to be 12 or 14% delinquency, looking at the way delinquencies are normally figured. You could move over to the other 40% of that portfolio, and you drop down to a more normal average of 1.5 or 2% when you were dealing with a homeowner with a steady job and a steady payroll. So that I would kind of compare that with the agricultural loans, where your acts of God or a
number of circumstances, and when everything kind of accumulates into one paycheck at the end of the season. I have worked in what we call a highline fisherman that for 10 years in a row captured the most fish. That's the word the drafters here like to use, but harvested the most fish, or it was always amongst the top 10 fishermen. And then for no reason, one year he'd go out and he'd be in the bottom 10. And I think I kind of relate that to the agricultural program, that there are so many things that are beyond the control of the individual, and I don't find with my own experience in that arena the percentages of over 90 days particularly alarming, and particularly where it's developing. And I just wanted to throw that out.
Mr. Chairman, I should have spoken to delinquencies, but I think I would like to have Dean Brown to describe the aggressive efforts that have been made since January of this year to pursue those delinquent loans, if I may.
Certainly. The Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund Board has, within the past 8 months, adopted a policy on delinquencies and did, at the beginning of this year, send out delinquent letters to borrowers who were delinquent 30 days or longer to a total of 56 borrowers. As a result of that, there have been collections of over $250,000. Two loans were totally paid off, and all of the loans have had some type of arrangements made for repayment. In, as Senator McCaughey mentioned, in response to the fact that some borrowers do in fact have circumstances that allow their one paycheck, which is the crop, simply no recourse when it doesn't come through. So I feel that the fund has made some significant strikes in delinquency, strikes forward. And additionally, in response to one of the comments Senator Fakes made, the delinquency rates we're including on that cover sheet, I believe you have from our loan resume, includes those loans which have been referred to the Attorney General's office. The auditors have, in fact, informed us that we should remove the ones that have been referred for collection, foreclosure, legal action from our true delinquency list, since, in fact, they are undergoing a separate status of collection. Earlier in the comments before we approached the table here, those delinquencies were referred to as defaults, which, in fact, they are not. We're looking at simply those loans which are delinquent 30 days or longer. And what we find is that quite often within that 90-day period, those are brought current.
Chairman, I've sat on some loan committees myself, and I recall, and Senator Mulcahy would know this better than I, when you reach that point, you may, if you were in the private sector, a regulator would tell you to write those off, even though they may be collectible. For accounting purposes, they would be written off, and for a bank, those would no longer be shown as delinquent notes. They would come off the bottom line, and if you ever recovered, that's fine. That's analogous to what you're talking about.
That's true. It is analogous, and in fact, the fund does not write those off at that period. They carry them forward knowing well that we're dealing with a crop year, and the farmers will, in fact, pay off those loans. But under other circumstances, they'd be written off, and you would not see those reflected on them.
There's one difference. We're talking about people's money here. We're talking about state money. We're not talking about private money. We're not talking about private banks out there. And I don't know how we, in good conscience, you have, according to, this is a House research paper I got this morning as of April 29th, 1983, third quarter of FY83, you have 130 loans delinquent for $4.5 million over 90 days.
I have not seen what you're referring to, and in fact, those figures have not originated from inquiries into our staff.
It's my understanding that House Research, because of some, and I don't know the background of why they do it, but House Research keeps track of you every quarter, all your loans, all your delinquent loans, and whether they're 60 days or 90 days or those loans in default. So I am looking at their current April 29th data here on that.
Not having seen the figures and not knowing where they've done, okay, fine.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir.
Perhaps I might speak generally to this. I don't mean to say, by describing the steps that are taken, that we are indifferent to the problem of delinquencies. Indeed, I asked Dean to speak to this because of the efforts that have been taken this year in an effort to reduce the delinquencies and to make collections I queried the Division of Agriculture with regard to default, where the loss has actually taken place. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, but the default rate has been 1%, or how much has actually been lost through the loan settlement?
It's less than 1% of the actual default rate. What we have found is that, and this is really reflected from a couple of sources, the fund has grown in the last 3 years from $7 million to $53 million. So the default rate, in fact, reflects what has been determined to this point. I think that growth has resulted in what we've seen as a delinquency rate that, in fact, when you compare it nationwide with Farm Home Administration, who has a nationwide average of all of the states of 24% delinquency rate, and some states range well over 30%, I feel that we may, in fact, have a very conservative delinquency rate for a development fund.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure difference is. The senator made reference to public money and private banking. I thought that the purpose here was developmental and to do things which the private sector could not or would not do, and recognizing that there would be the collateral or security of improvements to the property, which have been mentioned before, that the public would take a longer range and more long-term risks than a prudent banker could do. If a prudent banker could do it, we wouldn't be doing it, I assume. Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to cut anybody off, but I suppose I have to confess that I already know more about this than I really want to know. I was accused this morning of resisting information, and I now confess that I want to resist further information. I would like to move the bill out with individual recommendation.
Senator Ferguson?
One question prior to that, and that's a question I had yesterday about disaster areas, and I see that you have it in the bill. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Well, perhaps Senator Fertitta would. As I understand it, the Delta area has been declared a natural disaster area. And there is provision for that under Title III, and it is in that area, the intent of the bill, that under that is where this limit on the short-term loan amount would be applicable, because the tenor of our discussion yesterday was not to raise the limitations in the senator's district or other farming communities in the state.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add to that. Senator Joseph is correct. The intention is only to raise those limits where it can be justified. And justify it through declaration or public acknowledgement that you had crop failure, you had other disasters, and that precludes anybody conning for more funds for a not good purpose.
Senator Sackett?
What's the total amount of loans that have been appropriated for this fund over the years?
Total appropriation since 1953 has been $53 million.
53?
Yeah.
And what is the total amount that has been written off?
I'll have to check that figure. I had it this last week, but I'll have to get you the total figure. I can tell you that within the last 2 years, there's been only 60,000 written off, and that overall in the fund is less than 1% write-off.
The total... total ever since the creation of the fund has been less than 1%.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I can give you a little information that you never had before. I can go back as a youngster. I remember my father telling me, you can't afford to farm unless you got 3 years of money. You can always count on a crop failure. You can always count on a flood. You can always count on something happening. And the fact of the matter is, unless the banker wants your land for development, they're going to carry you. And that's been the norm in our country for 100 years. You have to figure at least 2 to 3 years in that you only get one payday, and usually it's every September, once a year. Either you make it or you don't make it. If you don't make it, you carry those notes due, and they have to obviously go due for at least another year until the next payday comes up. It's pretty much that simple, I think. Senator Dustin?
I renew my motion.
Yeah, the motion before the committee? All in favor of moving the Finance Committee substitute out individual recommendation? Bill, moved out individual recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I'll let you keep a copy because I just got it from the company.
Yeah.
Your last quarter is the worst.
Yeah, is this Senate Bill 132 at this time?
Committee substitute with
this. What are we taking up?
132.
132. Act establishing the Alaska Administrative Journal.
1 more time.
This has become a print. Would be like two yet, but you put me.
May substitute for Senate Bill 132 is before the committee. Is there a discussion?
There's no discussion, Mr. Chairman. We've had this, I think, 2 or 3 times before. I'm moving after unanimous consent to put out individual recommendations.
Before the committee to move out individual recommendations, all in favor? Bill moves individual recommendations. Next bill to come before the committee. I might add, if anyone is here by chance, to give testimony or to listen to the testimony on Senate Bill 256, Special Appropriation Department of Education for Renovation of Sheldon Jackson Museum. In accordance with Rule 23, we'll have to hold this up and have hearings on it next Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
This time, the committee will take up Senate Bill 80, amending Chapter 157 SLA 1980 to extend the life of the Task Force Fire Prevention and Control. We have a number of people here to testify on this.
Mr. Chairman, these are my bills that were assigned, and just for a brief backup, there were 3 bills, 80, 81, and 82. 82 was for a supplemental appropriation, which is no longer valid for this year. Senate Bill 80 extends the life of the Task Force on Fire Prevention and Control. They were first given life in 1980, and they were to run until June 30th of 1983 and produce a document on a long-range fire prevention and control document. They were funded in 1980. They had wanted $180,000. Governor Hammond had vetoed a portion of that, so they got $100,000. They were funded in 1981, and for reasons that we can't yet determine, they were not funded in 1982. So they published this document here, which is an interim report on fire prevention and control in the state of Alaska. They are here. Senate Bill 80 would extend their life until January 1, 1985. They are asking for $163,000 to complete their mission, which is what Senate Bill 81 is all about. The sum of $163,000 is appropriated to prevent, complete the mission of the task force and to publish the final report. And these gentlemen are here to testify on this, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is D. Robert Hague. Today, representing the Alaska State Firefighters Association and the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, we are here, as the Senator mentioned, in support of Bill 1881. Mr. Chairman, we know that you and your committee have many bills, and time is of the essence, so we will provide detailed background information for the record. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce to you and the members of your committee, Mr. Bob Schoenberg. Mr. Schoenberg is a member of the Board of Directors of Alaska Fire Chiefs Association and its first vice president, and a member of the Task Force on Fire Prevention and Control. Mr. Schoenberg is the expert in this matter, and I'm sure can answer any questions that you or your committee might have.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, I am Bob Schoenberg. Originally, the task force came into being in 1980. Our first meetings and our first fundage, we established a 3-year program to carry out. As the legislation established a 3-year program, the members of the task force set themselves up a 3-year goal program, with the first year organizing a second-year study and the third year preparing their final report. unfortunately, the 1982 funding did not come about. This resulted in the premature birth, so to speak, of the task force report in Alaska on Fire. The report itself was studied in detail in October of this past year at the annual Fire Chiefs Conference and the annual Firefighters Conference. There are 21 recommendations in the task force report. I believe that we supported 17 of the recommendations, and there were 5 recommendations that we wanted additional study. It was well realized by all of the members present and in the resolutions adopted that the report itself is deficient in some major areas. What it boiled down to is we did not have the opportunity to fully develop the recommendations. We had made the initial study, and because of the timing that occurred in 1982, we were forced to hurry to completion and go with what we had at that point. There were major areas that we could not address because they were very serious areas, particularly on the part of the state's involvement.
For making a good in-depth study in that area and very careful recommendations pertaining to the different departments and agencies that have different roles in influencing on the fire protection of our communities. This is probably the major area, one of the two major areas that are not addressed in the report, and the major area of concern that brought about the task force in the initial first phase, and that is the state involvement, how we can reduce duplication, unify the efforts that are taking place now, get some coordination going so those that are out in Alaska can have a viable response on state agencies. Right now, they're dealing with people in the area in fire protection and dealing with many, many state agencies, which in many cases there's lack of coordination and cooperation between these agencies, and it's very difficult for the people out in the community to really understand all of the facets of what the state involvement is. I believe this was our major concern when the task force came about, and this was the one area that we did not address in the task force report. We were at the point of going into subcommittee work on this when we realized the funding was terminated and we had to go with what we had. Another area of major concern was in the area of wildland fire protection. The role of that is escalating tremendously in the state, and we didn't even begin to touch that. In the western part of Alaska, Kenai Peninsula, this role is the state is assuming the responsibility for protecting all of these areas, and we were not able to really look at it in any definitive manner and respond with recommendations, except very light recommendations. The report, the association members and the fire chiefs felt that what had come out in the report, considering that it would have been an interim report with excellent work on the part of the task force, they're very disappointed that the total report was not completed. It would have been submitted in January of this year had we been funded. Our work would have been done. We are seeking the extension of the life of the task force to 1985 and the funding for this next year's operation. How long it would take us to complete the work, the task force to complete this work, I believe depends a lot on the administration, the support that the task force received in completing this. It could go fairly rapidly. It depends on the type of people that we can bring back on board. We've lost the people that we had on the ministers on the task force, the director and the research analysis. We may have to start with new people, and it looks like we would have to. And there would be a certain training period involved there. In October, the task force members at that point were contacted. There were many of them. Most of them that were contacted were very much willing to complete this. We all felt the same way on the task force, that we had to go with what we had, but we all realized it was incomplete. And with that, I would like to answer any questions if you do have any.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there any questions, members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I just have a comment. I have heard nothing but good about it. Kodiak, Alaska, has a lot of support for completion.
Bob, looking at this report, I see that you made recommendations about the governor's office and the Department of Law, about an arson specialist in the Department of Law. What happened since this report was published? Has anybody implemented it?
I'm not sure specifically what's happening at this point. I think this is one of our concerns. We know that The administration is responding in certain areas from different words that we get back, that there is, particularly the Commissioner of Public Safety is concerned about the recommendations that were made in the task force report. I don't have any real current knowledge. I think the report is being utilized. And I think, again, this is one of our concerns because there's 21 recommendations in there, and there's five of them. We wanted additional study, and we wanted to make that very, we made that very plain at our conference. And the ones that are valid that we support, terrific. I think they are responding to some of these. I really couldn't be specific on it. But I know that they are looking at the report and have read the report from some of the communications that we've received.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have one more person signed up from the Department of Public Safety, Mr. Gordon Brunson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Gordon Brunton, State Fire Marshal, representing the Department of Public Safety. Briefly, the position of the department is to support this bill. However, we feel that the time frame is too long. We would prefer to see the work done in 6 months' time and the report finalized. Thank you. That's all I have.
Any questions, members of the committee? Thank you. Discussion part of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move SB 80 and SB 81 within the recommendation.
For the committee, all in favor, move SB 80 and 81. Both bills move the committee into the recommendation. Next item before the committee is Senate Bill 190, Special Appropriation Grant for Wrangell Totem Pole.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator. We have one person who's signed up to testify, that's Dave Kessick.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I want to thank you for giving me an opportunity to present a program that we in Southeast Alaska feel is very, very important. In the past several years, the Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation, which is a public charity organized within the laws of the state of Alaska and the federal government, have been working with the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people in the Southeast Panhandle. Our primary concern as an organization has been to work with the history, with the culture, the traditions, the language, and various aspects of the people in Southeast Alaska. In 1982, the Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation put together a gathering, a historic gathering that took place here in the community of Juneau, where we brought in 200 people from the various areas in Southeast Alaska. And from that meeting came this particular document. One of the things that we heard being mentioned by the elders and the individuals who participated in this historic gathering of the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian was that they wanted to work together. The common statement was being of one mind, having a spirit of unity, and holding hands together to accomplish the goal of presenting the history of the people from the Southeast Panhandle. This particular legislation is not only for the people that this history would come from. This basically, I feel, would be information that would be made available to the public right at the very present time with respect to the development of the Southeast Panhandle. There's a lot of inquiries as it relates to archaeological sites. There's a lot of inquiries as it relates to various historic sites and so forth, and we as an organization have been able to bring together what we would call a very solid cultural resource, human resource base that has been providing assistance to the various state agencies and federal agencies, and even within the local community of Juneau here. And we've been working with the other communities like Wrangell, Sitka, Ketchikan, and all the other communities that are represented here. So I'm here as the president of the Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation, and really, in behalf of the people in Southeast, we come here to ask for your assistance and support of this legislation.
Thank you, David. Any questions?
Yeah, I think that there was some funding for a similar project in Saxman somewhere. Is that correct? You know, are they left out of this, or are they handled some other way?
With respect to, this is a cultural and a language and cultural studies program. I think Saxman is looking at a totem restoration program, which are two different subjects.
All right, thank you.
Senator Ferguson?
What we have in here is the Wrangell totem pole restoration excluding Saxman, because we felt that if we could take care of a portion of the totem pole restoration and it works out all right, then I would come back for Saxman next year.
Senator Figgs.
Through the chair to Senator Ferguson. I was reading in here that the totem poles on the island were done in the 30s and the 40s. Are there any real antique totem poles out there that are that can be preserved?
I'd have to ask someone from Southeast Alaska. I believe there is, but I'm not that knowledgeable about it.
They say more
totem
poles.
There are totems that and various other artifacts within the Southeast Panhandle that are very, very delicate, and I'll give you an example. We joint venture or a memorandum of agreement. We entered into an agreement with the U.S. Forest Service and the State of Alaska Department of Education to remove a very, very old canoe that was found in the Prince of Wales Island area. And it, right at the present time, is down at the State Museum here in the community. Additionally, we joint ventured with the State Department of Education to return a very, very old traditional ceremonial potlatch hat, a trinket hat. It was a very, very old hat that was being auctioned off in New York, and we worked with the clan, the members of the clan that claimed the hat, and also with the State Department of Education, as well as the Tlingit Haida Central Council. So for your information, we are not Sea Alaska Corporation. We are the Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation, which is a nonprofit public charity, and as such can enter into these types of agreements. And we're looking at working with the U.S. Forest Service and other agencies and archaeological sites and so forth. And in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, the one thing that I would like to say that I think so often is overlooked by people that are very important, such as yourselves, is the history that's being created within the state of Alaska. Not only Tlingit history, not only Haida history or Tsimshian history, but there is a lot of history that is occurring. There are a number of things that you've discussed today. And I would say that the state really needs to seriously look at being able to establish some kind of organization that would work toward the gathering of the history of the people of this state, because I think it's very interesting, it's colorful, and it's a unique state, and I think it's worth doing and it's worth putting money into, in addition to all the other things that you're working on. Thank you.
Senator?
I couldn't agree with this gentleman more, and I really appreciate him coming here. I've heard in several lectures at the museum in Anchorage that the majority of the artifacts of the peoples of Alaska and even the early settlers of Alaska are outside in European museums, and I think that's really sad, and I wish we could have a real concerted effort to try to go out there and identify where those pieces are and in any way, shape, or form bring them back home.
Wait, Mr. Chairman, I think there is a project for going microfishing going to Europe.
They wouldn't accept me. I'd like to have gone. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Any discussion members of the committee?
Before you move? Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, I'd recommend that we disallow the fiscal note by the department asking for 0.5% of the funds. This would be a grant directly to the Heritage Foundation, and the administration doesn't need to take
just
any.
Just zero it out. See what they were doing at the beginning of the session, even lately. They've been reappropriating and using fiscal notes on appropriation bills, and that's erroneous. They just haven't learned yet.
Yeah, wait. What's did you say that one more time? What are they doing?
They're making fiscal notes on appropriation bills, and that's a duplication.
Yeah,
you fund it twice.
Right.
And they've never learned that you don't do that. So the 459.7 would be zero.
I'd like to know why they're taking 5%, or I mean a half percent.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman,
we have a motion.
I'd move Senate Bill 190 out with individual recommendations.
Motion for the committee, individual rec.
And zero the fiscal note.
All in favor? Bill, move.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Well, he has left. I was going to increase the member of the Maryland legislature.
Accepted at 1:30, the Finance Committee will take up the HES and DOT budget. 1:30 this afternoon, reset until that time.
Closed out and then no meeting tomorrow.
My account put on the food. Tom, I need that list of all the hearings and just put what page is that? There it is.
Chairman, I'll accept your proxy.
Give him the
chairman. He's going to be stingy. He's going to be stingy with his proxy.
Right. I'll give him to you at all.
Oh, well. I'll try again next year.
Okay. What page? Did we take care of all of... Yeah, we're done with that page. Were there any more add-ons on that specific page?
On what?
On page 132, or 130, I'm sorry, I'm on
121.
We left off on 121, sir.
Which is 131.
Subprogram
135.
135. Win.
Yes.
There any add-ons to win? Okay. I'm going to make a motion, and Senator Mulcahy, you make a motion right after me. We'll go faster. I passed out all of my add-ons. They were for health aid training for $248,000, for the village clinic operations of $100,000, for the YKHC health aid program of $488,000, which is they're all continuing programs, and for the continuing program of the Galena clinic for $45,000. They had requested 90 and were winning them off. Next year they shouldn't request any. That's a total of $881,000. On that, and I'd like to make a motion that those be adopted in those specific pages that they do. Are there any questions on the contents of those? Because I'd like, if you have any questions, I can explain them all in detail. We passed them out last week when we were going through this budget. Okay, without objections, those are adopted. Senator Mulcahy.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to adopt for the community, Bristol Bay Community Aid Program 161. Kodiak Intrat Health Care, 120, that's been cut back from 175. And Mr. Chairman, I cut the proposed ones for the EMS, for the Aleutian Pribilof, Bristol Bay, and in the Kodiak Island area in half. So that would total, that those would read instead 28.6, 49.7, 32.0 for a total of those of 110. A 0.3 to be added to the proposed grants for those, Mr. Chairman.
Could he repeat the amount for community health aid in Bristol Bay?
Community health aid in Bristol Bay is 163.0.
And then you said 120. Did you mean 120.6 for Kodiak itinerant?
Yeah, 120.6. And then for the EMS program,
cut
each one of those in half.
Mm-hmm.
Request. And that would be added to the proposed grant figure for each one of those.
Because we asked.
All right.
Did you have a path out on that? Motion had been made. Was a discussion? Without objection, that's adopted. On the nurses, field nursing, we had requested, and Jen, Senator Fakes, complied with the request in terms of reducing the transportation or the travel down to FY82, less 10%. However, there has been a real increase in the cost of going out to the rural areas, and I'd like to propose an increase there of $54,600 for code 200.
Yeah, I have no problems with that at all, Mr. Chairman.
Without objection, that will be adopted. And Senator Joseph.
Mr. Chairman, for Senator Fisher and myself, at page 161, special education grants, an additional $250,000. This is the infant learning program. At page 259, community mental health grants, this is for 24 community mental health services and covers deleted federal block grant money, $300,000. At page 273, community developmental disabilities, contract for services with for persons with developmental disabilities, including handicapped daycare, respite care, et cetera. That would be $150,000. At page 281, special projects and grants for education referrals and advocacy for mental health services, $20,900. The McLaughlin Youth Center add-on at page 363, Mr. Chairman, would be $26,100 for contractual to restore funds necessary for food, medical supplies, and clothing in those facilities. And at page 365, the Fairbanks Youth Facility, $32,800.
Is there an objection? Without objection, so ordered. Does that take care of everything in health and social services?
No.
No?
No. We've got to do something with information systems on 285.
Page 285? What page in the new one? Is that eligible, the information system?
The letters in the town, I want to make sure the illusion purple.
Yeah, it should be on page 298.
298. Okay, what did we do here?
What page are we on?
290. This is on a new...
285.
Data service. I go from 281 to
285.
Well, that's right. Fisher and Josephson are subtracting $940,000 from this VRA.
Oh, I told him to zero that out. That's wrong. Because we're doing that in the follow-through anyway. No, that's closed.
Okay, then we need to go to API. Forensic treatment, there's a number of changes in the format.
Forensic API.
It's old 247.
Okay, 226.
Sure. I had an add-on on this page that then was later told that it wasn't necessary.
It's in there.
Okay, what was the question here?
Yeah, what is the question? Haven't we approved this page? Okay, Mr. Chairman. This page is open, and what we've done is we've reviewed all the numbers with the department, and the department is pleased with the numbers. They feel they've resolved the contractual line item problem. The money is there to do what Senator Josephson and Senator Fisher wanted to do. The new numbers are for the line 01 is 11,332,000.6. Line 02 is 63.1. Line 03 is 779.2. Line 04 is 677.7. Line 05 is 10.5. Line 06 is 191.1. For a total expenditure of 13,054.2. General fund expenditure of 12,803.7. And what the department has done is they've eliminated forensic treatment, BRU, which is on the next page, 0251, combined it with Alaska Psychiatric Institute, and feel that this will be more efficient and will give us a more accurate picture of the economics of the situation. And when the first time I went through this BRU, we hadn't settled on those numbers yet, which is why we left it open. So I moved those numbers.
Okay, without objection.
Senator Ray had an add-on on page.
That's right.
He would not forgive us if we did not go over that. Senator Ray's add-on is on Med Alert, and I'm just wondering, and I'm just asking this for the information of the committee, for no other reason, just information. The Med Alert is the little boxes that they put on the elderly folks so that if they fall down or whatever, they can push the button on the neck and it'll bring the emergency people to them. Is it appropriate to put it in the HESS BRU, or should it be in the Department of Administration with the Older Actions Commission and all that?
I talked to them about this, and it should be in the HESS one because they had people running back and forth between the departments, and the administration didn't know anything about it.
Okay.
And that's for $96,000. Is there an objection? It'll be on page 177 in the old one, 194 in the new.
Should be represented.
Without objection, that'll be included.
What are we doing now?
Okay, we need to go to the page.
For what?
Any more?
Yeah, there is a couple. Community mental health grants, page 259.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that was on my list.
I think we did it, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we need the
okay,
intent.
Okay, we need the letter of intent, though.
238. Okay, is there an objection to the letter of intent? The $150,000 of the $300 add-ons for community mental health grants be designated for the Illusion Pueblo Island Association. Without objection, that'll be included.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes?
Okay.
Anything else?
Yes, sir. There's one more letter of intent, but we're looking at a regional administration on Old 255. Old 255. It's a transfer.
Right.
On the 03 line, we're transferring in $600,000. This is a departmental recommendation to transfer $600,000 into here from community mental health grants so that they can contract out outpatient beds rather than having the community mental health clinics do that.
What's the new page number?
The same.
Page say the number again.
255.
The same?
Yeah, page same.
So the 03 column here would be 1608.7. And it's just a transfer from one
okay,
BRU
is there an
to
objection?
Another.
You've got that, Alan, so I can get with him on it. Don't fix that on the page.
Then I have one more letter of intent. Wherever our alcohol grants are.
243.
243? The only region in the state that does not receive state funds for alcohol programs is the Aleutian Triple Island area. and the subcommittee didn't feel that that was fair or equitable, and so we feel that at least $100,000 of the amount of money that we approved for the alcohol grant should be given to the Illusion Privilege.
Is there an objection? No objection.
Mr. Chairman, did we reduce the alcohol grants? We were talking about it as a committee, reducing those alcohol grants.
I want to add up the grand total of all of these departments first and then go back.
All right.
Do that recommendation. Going? All done? Two more. Just a quick one, the Commerce and Economic Development. There's a pass out that was done for the Federal Communication Systems, Federal Joint Board, to APUC, and it was my error. For some reason, I thought it went to DNR, I don't know, but it goes to the Commerce and Economic Development for $100,000. Is there any objections? Without objection, that would be included in the Commerce and Economic Development. Department of Transportation. There are two motions to be made here that I'm familiar with. One, I'd like to move for an additional $323,000 to be added to the air safety.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Could you just stop for 30 seconds?
Sure.
So I can find this.
Okay, we'll take an Eddie's. You want to hand this? $1,000. We had put in $267,000 to bring it up to $590,000. The original request was about $700,000. We would need an additional $323,000. There's a bill which is in this committee right now, which we would not need to pass out if we just put this in here. The commissioner came to me very high priority.
And this is to set up the program for the aviation safety program.
Yeah, right, this is
the
phase
American
two.
Airlines.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my bill, but you don't need a letter of intent or anything. You just put the money in.
Put the money in.
Okay.
And Commissioner O'Brien, the board. Is there an objection? Without objections, that's included. Senator?
Okay, at old page 95 and in the new printout, which we don't have at page 125, is the state equipment fleet. There is a figure we adopted, $7,321,000, which it represents output from the Highway Working Capital Fund to the General Fund. That figure can be increased, the subcommittee feels, by $4 million. So the figure to be moved is $11,321,000, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's the $4 million that we pick up there. Is there an objection? Without objection, incorporated. Any more additions to the DOT?
That's a minus, right?
Yeah. DOT is closed. Anything further to come before the committee? Meeting adjourned.